Welcome to the West Harlem Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Kinston, and this is episode 29. Hello to you, wherever you're listening to this, whether it's at comfort at home or maybe you're out on a run and listening as you do so. Wherever you are, welcome to this latest podcast. It's now Wednesday, the 5th of December, 2012, and the entries for the 2013 race have now closed at the end of November. There were 279 entries, and Ian and the committee are working out the way to go forward with those. I know people are waiting with bated breath to see whether they've got a place or not, but please be patient with us, and Ian will let you know as soon as he can. Lots of folks who are involved in the West Harlem Way Race are doing the Markathon, which was started by Marco and Debs a few years ago and has gained in popularity each year. I've decided to have a go this year and I'm really enjoying it so far. It's only day five, but it's been good to get out and to be part of that. Again, if you go on the Facebook page, there's loads and loads of comments. I really like it. There was a couple just yesterday where people were saying, oh, I'm not going to make it. And within minutes, there was loads of comments telling people to get going and get out and you can do it. So it's really good, just that support to get people out and running. Anyway, this month's podcast, there's three main items. I've started again my blog post of the week. This is something I started when I did the podcasts at the beginning in January. And I just choose someone's post each week and then just read it out. And I've chosen this time Antonia's. Antonia is one of the ones who is involved in the Markathon, so I've just read out her report from this week. And then the second item is Dave Waterman. Dave started a little series a few podcasts ago where he does his Waterman's Piratical Ramblings, and this one is just thinking about the race in June, so again, that's well worth listening to. And then the main item this time is an interview with Keith Hughes. Keith has run the race eight times, and we'll go into that on the interview, so I won't go over that again now, but you can listen to that. Apologies right at the beginning that the connection wasn't great on Skype, and sometimes it comes and goes a little bit. I think most of the time you can hear him pretty well, but apologies if it's not the high quality that you would expect, but we did our best. Okay, so I hope you enjoy this podcast. As I say, it's the Antonia's blog post first, then Dave, and then it's my interview with Keith Hughes. So enjoy. For my blog post of the week this week, I've chosen a post from Antonia Johnson. Her blog is called petitefeetrunaway.blogspot.co.uk. And like lots of other people in the West Harlem Way group, Antonia's doing the Markathon. And so I thought I'd read out her post from the 3rd of December. Markathon. Aye, why not? The challenge. Run every day in December. The rules. Minimum of 3 miles or 25 minutes. The benefits. Gloating and a smaller bottom. The obstacles. Snow, ice and general can't be botheredness. All the cool kids are doing it, so I thought I'd join in. Whilst I can run, I only do it 3 or 4 times a week. So lacing up the shoes and pulling up the lycra every day will be a challenge for me. I'm a whooping 2 days in and already grizzling about sore knees and smelly running kit, so I can imagine that I'll be a joy to live with for the rest of the month. My legs were set to fly on day one. I negotiated the Haymarket tramworks without smacking into any fences or swearing at any suitcase-pulling tourists. Unfortunately, this early success was short-lived, as my chosen route along the river had succumbed to the frost. That's okay, though, because on day one of the Markathon, I probably shouldn't be running too fast anyway. So I try a bit of ice skating. This may actually be cheating, so I decide to stop and take out some walkers in the process instead. It's probably time to reconsider the route. Perhaps run on the grass where a fall would be safer. I reroute and get lapped on Arthur's Seat. Other runners obviously have magic shoes for ice running, as their pace seems unaffected. But are they doing the Markathon? Because maybe that's what I'm pacing myself for. I make it home alive. Day two was a planned run near Pitlochry with Scott, Norm and Ali. Scott's training for his first marathon, with this being his longest training run. Norm's just back from a marathon abroad, and Ali is training for Marathon de Sable. And we're all running the Gran Canaria Marathon in January. Not together though, it's most definitely a race. Three middle-aged men, how hard could it be? Apparently for them, the run wasn't hard at all. However, for me, things were a little more difficult. I feel that I was at a bit of a disadvantage growing up on a Pacific island. I'm not very good at picking which icy patches are good, which icy patches are bad, and what's just a plain bit of a trail with no ice at all. Although obviously there are no bits of trail without ice, that wouldn't be exciting enough. So I pull up the rear with the boys, stopping every few hundred metres to wait for me. We don't want a Keith Hughes incident after all. Norm is from the area and loves engineering, so I learn about some bridges. I actually quite fancy bridges. An exhibition on bridges makes up my favourite part of the Scottish Museum. The weather is great, the scenery is stunning. Every time I look up to check it out, I dance a wee bit more in the ice. They'll probably be booking me for the TV show next year. There are some grass turfs next to the road we're running along, so now I'm digging in, leaping over the tufts, racing the boys who are jogging along the road. I've got my fists clenched and my chubby face screwed up in concentration. Boing, boing, boing. Don't fall, lift your knees. I have to run up the hill so I don't get left behind. And then the grass runs out and it's back to the icy road for me. Beyonce and I pull up the rear again as the boys carry on in the distance. After about 3 hours we get back to the car, pub time. Although I've forgotten, we are now to climb Ben Vrachy. The view is amazing, although my general ability is rubbish. The top is covered in snow and we celebrate by drinking Caribbean Burst flavoured Lucasade. Highly appropriate. I fancy a hot chocolate with marshmallows. An even number of each colour would be appreciated. I'm slowly going down the hill that I was going up. Scott holds my hand. I get a lesson in walking down hills covered in snow. 1. Stand on the black bits. There are no black rocks left. They're covered in bloody snow. 2. Don't put all your weight on one foot. Sometimes one leg is up in the air and I have to. 3. Avoid the shiny bits. My eyes don't work well enough to differentiate between the different shades of white. 4. Take big steps. Don't shuffle. I'm sliding because it's slippery. That's why you're holding my hand. 5. Try not to put both feet in the same place. But I find a black rock. I thought that's what I was meant to be standing on. I could blame my peepers because they can't see properly. Or I could blame my shoes because one of them has a grip underneath worn off. I showed this to the boys at the start, as it obviously means I have been running through some rough terrain over the last few years. Or I could blame my complete lack of coordination, which is awful, and why I'm a runner and do not participate in team sports involving balls, handheld objects or other with wheels. Although I think it was probably just because my legs weren't as long. We're back on the last few stretches of road. It's about 4:30 and reasonably dark. The boys are ahead and I can see whether I can't see whether I should be running on the road or not. There doesn't seem to be much frost, but there are shiny patches, so I'm meant to avoid them. There's also black patches, and I'm supposed to run on them, so I run very slowly down the middle of the road, dodging shiny patches. In the dark, down a country road, by myself. I turn a corner, and Scott's standing there laughing. The shiny patches are water, not ice. It's fine to run. I look like a twit. 6 hours after we started, I finally get to sit by the fire in the Moulin pub with a drink and some fish and chips. A great adventure and the boys are in good form, so I'm really going to have to put in some training if I want to beat them in Gran Canaria in January. Norm and Ali have to call their wives to apologise for being late. Blame Antonia, she ran like a girl. So what did I get out of the weekend? A hangover, a curry and a massive kick to my confidence regarding my running ability. I won't give you a play-by-play of my daily runs because they are about to be the same and very boring. Tonight's run, let's just say, I hit 25 minutes before I hit 3 miles.
Waterman's Piratical Ramblings. Distant Memories of June. As I look out of the window here in South Lanarkshire, I'd like to be able to say that the balmy temperatures of June are but a memory compared to the brass monkey weather that's howling outside. I'd like to be able to tell you that suffering the below zero temperatures here in December are worth it for memories of a warm and dry West Island Way race in the summer. But I can't. Nope, even with the passing of 6 months, memories of torrential downpours and cold temperatures throughout the first night of this year's race haunt me in my sleep and pester me during the day. And I wasn't even running the thing. For the first time in 7 years, I stood in the car park of Mulgrave train station, surrounded by individuals that looked like refugees from a Maxwell convention in need of a good meat pie, without being dressed like Maxwell needing a meat pie myself. And I'll be honest, it was painful that I decided not to run. When I ran my first West Island Way race, way back in 2006, Keith Hughes told me, "Watch out, Cobber, this race will get under your skin." And Keith was right. I'd walked the West Island Way 3 times prior to my first race, so something kept calling me back. I'm not sure if it was the beautiful countryside, the amazing views, the challenge of covering 95 miles powered by nothing but human endeavour, or the fact that, as an average, there is one pub for every 5 miles of the route. But something called me back to stand on the start line of that race in 2006 and every year since. Barring this year, of course, when my role was as support crew for the two physically largest race entrants of 2012, Martin Hooper the paratrooper and Big David Ross. Together, they weigh the same as a small family car, and they leave unstable structures in danger of collapse whenever they run. Built for running, these two are definitely not. But I suppose that the other runners in this year's race could content themselves that as they stood there in the lashing down rain, waiting to start the race, the sheer expanse of surface area of my two runners must have absorbed a good deal of the precipitation that fell into Mulgrave. It was then that any desire to run this year's race began to subside. By the time I stood beneath cover at the Beechtree Inn at Dungoyne, eating a bacon roll and sipping a cup of tea, my desire to run dissolved as the puddles underfoot became deeper. But my admiration for those running became greater. Now, running 95 miles in the Highlands is a stiff undertaking, let me tell you. Running 95 miles in the Highlands when you're getting lashed with rain is something else entirely. Of course, your perspective of an event can only ever be told from your position within it, and mine was a support crew for two runners who ought to have a specific weight category of their own. Kodiak bear status would probably be quite fitting. And as the pair ate up the miles, I saw nothing but joy on their faces. I've argued before that poor weather can be defined as bracing given the right mental attitude, and Dave and Martin appeared to be enjoying the bracing weather. And as the hours passed, I discovered for the first time what a challenge being support can be. It mixes hours of inactivity with minutes of chaos, where the requirement is to receive your runner, service his or her needs, feed him, patch him up, and send him on his way with a hearty slap on the back. The real challenge comes when that runner is flagging and a judgment call needs to be made regarding going on or stopping. I've been in that position as a runner myself, and I know that it's not always the competitor that's best placed to make that judgment call. As a support crew, we had our first dilemma at Tindrum, when for Big Dave Ross, withdrawal was a distinct possibility. The decision to carry on was a close call, and if nothing else, attempting to cover the next 7 or so miles to Bridge of Orkney sealed the deal, but for Dave, he had given everything he had to that race. I've often heard it said that all you need to do is put one foot in front of the other and you'll reach the end of the race. But when that footfall sends waves of pain through your legs and every part of your being wants to stop, but you know that if you do stop, you'll die of exposure, but actually you don't really care. And you've got to place that footfall thousands of times, then that refrain becomes pretty meaningless. And so, half of my small family car withdrew from the race at Bridge of Orkney and was packaged up and sent on his way to Fort Bill for a well-earned rest. The Hooper battled on valiantly, and it appeared that the goblet that sits proudly on Martin's fireplace would soon be joined by a second. By the time I reached Bridge of Orkney, I discovered that it was nothing short of a vision of hell. Forget fire and brimstone. If Satan wants to create an eternal misery, all he needs is a few thousand midges and some exposed flesh. Hooper had already left by the time I'd arrived, and to be quite honest, who can blame him, given the swarms of bloodsuckers, and Sean Stone of course. Hooper stormed across Rannoch Moor, propelled on by memories from his recent deployment in Afghanistan with a parachute regiment, and with only 14 miles left to reach the finish, we waited for our hero at Kinloch Leven Community Centre, where we shot the breeze with Julie Clark, Chris Ellis and Pete Duggan, and scoffed Geraldine's delicious orange cake. A phone call from Mark Hamilton, who was accompanying Hooper over the Devil's Staircase, fired us into action when we were told the pair were only a mile away. I suppose that the passing of over an hour before our charge appeared was a good indication that all was not well. Poor old Martin was shuffling along like an extra from Shaun of the Dead and could barely lift his feet off the ground. Dr. Chris's assessment was that life was not yet extinct despite there being very little brain activity, and the Hooper might reach the end. This, by the way, is a normal state of being for Martin. It became apparent very soon that the word might was loaded with optimism when Hooper struggled to even leave the community centre. For us, it was apparent the war was over, and we packaged up the remaining half of our small family car and sent him too on his way to Fort Bill for another well-earned rest. My memories of this year's race are still pervaded by the horrendous weather, and as I look out of the window at the snow and ice here in South Lanarkshire, those memories are very much alive. But I'm banking on the fact that lightning won't strike twice, and June 2013 will be positively Mediterranean. So, my race entry is submitted, as is that of Martin Hooper the paratrooper. Together, we will weigh the same as half a small family car, but one with a rather heavy bag in the boot. See you in June. Laters.
Well, we have a very special guest with us today on our West Highland Way podcast, Keith Combe Hughes, and just to fill you in a little bit, for those who may not know Keith, Keith's run the West Highland Way 8 times, started in 2002 and has gone right through to this year's race. His best time is 22 hours 40 and 21, but he's also well known for doing some extra bits as well, which we'll get onto. So welcome, Keith. Thanks for spending time with us tonight. Maybe you could just introduce yourself a little bit, where you're from and a bit of your background, and maybe tell us why you're called Corned Beef.
I'm a 40-something Australian bloke that lives in Edinburgh. I fell into some bad company a few years ago, and when I was found out to be a sort of runner, I was working out at Grangemouth, and got to talking with a bloke out there, a guy by the name of John Kennedy, who had run the West Highland Way. And long story short, we got to talking, and he said, you can run the West Highland Way. And I said, what? No, there's no way anybody can run that distance. So anyway, went out for a few runs with John, and effectively that's led me to where I am at the moment. I live here in Edinburgh. I've got two kids. What else? I'm living with my girl Sam and her kids at the moment. All all pretty tickety boo, and in my off time, I go for a little bit of a run.
And the corned beef?
Corned beef, yeah. That one is because back in 2005 was one of my off years. I didn't run it, but I swear from Bridge of Orkey from Tendrum to King's House, and I came across a certain bloke called Dave Waterman, whose support crew was a gentleman by the name of Daryl Wilkins. Daryl Jacobs. Anyway, corned beef, Keith. Cockney rhyming slang. And that's basically it.
Okay.
It's got nothing to do with the fact that I like corned beef or anything like that. It's just Cockney rhyming slang.
So that first race in 2002, was that your first ever ultra?
It was indeed, yeah. So, I met John at Grangemouth and I was working there. I'd had the race through him. I'd never done an ultra before. I'd done a couple of marathons. Actually done two marathons. Basically that was my first ultra. Really totally clueless in the first year. Did probably a couple of half marathons. Went on a couple of training runs with the likes of John and Jim Drummond and a few others. I think maybe even Ian Beattie at that time. And I don't know what I did to get myself a place, but then back in those days there wasn't really that much competition. It was all based on, well, meeting people and I guess people thought you'd get through it. I went into 2002 as a total greenhorn. Experience, didn't have a clue, but I obviously got to the end of it. In 33 hours and 15 minutes, I think I was 34th out of 36 finishes or something like that. That was basically it.
Yeah. So what memories have you got of that first race?
I just remember it being, taking a lot of time. like I said, totally clueless. I must have had 20 stops. I must have stopped for 10 or 15 minutes at each checkpoint. I had people sitting there and we'd just had a bit of a chinwag and a bit of a cup of tea and all the rest of it. I remember going across Rannoch Moor with Sean Water the Bridge. He was sweeping on his bike at the time. And we got to Half Bar Bridge on Rannoch Moor there. And it must have been, I don't know, 11:30, quarter to 12 at night, and I was just busted. We'd been going for obviously nearly 23 hours, and I just thought, you know what, I can't do this. And then the guy I was running with, crawling with, basically decided that that was it for him. And I thought, oh crikey, I've got to get King's House. And as I got to King's House, I thought, you know what, I'm going to have to go back into work and tell people on Monday morning that I only did 72 miles. And I guess something clicked in and basically made me kick on. And I guess the main thing that impacted me then was my support crew. A guy called Mark Hobbs was waiting there. It must have been, like I said, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. It was absolutely bucketing down. It was cold. And I got into King's House, and there was Mark waiting with his jiggle on, with his web wedding gear. He's going, all right, get yourself something to eat, let's go. I thought, you know what? And I spoke to, I think it was Gary Milne, that was the race director at that time. He was at King's House. And he said, oh, you know, you're all right. And I said, yeah, I'm all right. And I guess from there, about 7 hours later, I crossed the finish line. And I just remember that whole going through the forest at Montabra, absolutely busted, but never again, of course. then it gets into your brain and into your soul. And,
And then you had a year off in 2003 and then came back in 2004, and you ran that in, I've got your times here, 25 hours, 59 minutes and 52 seconds. So that was a big improvement. What did you do differently for the second one?
I don't know. I I probably did obviously a little bit more training. I mean, I had the benefit of the first year's experience. I was actually wanting to bet, wanting to get under 24 that year, and I'd asked Dario for the number 24. But unfortunately, just outside, or just before you do the turnoff in Mud Dog Park, man, about nine other blokes or nine other runners went straight as opposed to going north. And we ended up doing about a tour, probably 2.5-3 mile detour, which you don't need. You just don't need any more distance if you can possibly avoid it.
Yeah.
But that said, I did, obviously I had the same support through the people who were helping me out. They knew a little bit more. I knew a little bit more about what to expect. And whilst I was a little bit disappointed with only for getting sub 26, you know, taking 8 or 9 hours off, or 7 or 8 hours off my time was I was pretty chuffed with, you know. I think so. The only different thing was, it was experience. It was totally down to experience. You know what to expect. You know when you're going to be starting to do it and all the rest of it.
And then you had a couple more years off, and then from 2007 you've been ever present, and you've done every one since then. We haven't got time probably to go through every race, but I was really interested in 2009, that would be my third race. I remember getting to the end and having a shower and talking to folks and said, oh, have you heard that Keith's still going? I said, what do you mean still going? And he said, oh, he's doing the Great Glen Way as well. So you finished the West Highland Way. I think that year you were just at 23 hours 36. And then you carried on and did another, what would be, another 70-odd miles up to Inverness. So tell us a little bit about why you did that and what was it like?
I don't know why I did it, but I guess you're looking at it on the map. The Great Glen and the West Highland Way are separated by, I don't know, let's just call it less than half a mile, and it just seemed to make sense. I'd actually wanted to do it the previous year when I did 23:15, but I realised that I, at that time, when I was in the middle of that race, I didn't have enough in me. And I wanted to crack 24, and I wanted to, just do it right. And then, so the following year, I had to get back and do the Great Glen. So, I don't know, like I said, it just seemed to be logical that they were connected, so why not have a crack? As you say, got in, had a shower, I had all my sport crew ready to run and walk with me, and we just continued on up the Great Glen, it just seemed to be the right thing to do, it was really good fun right up until about the last marathon, coming in from Fort Augustus. That was, by that stage, I was just walking and just put one foot in front of the other. But I was pretty chuffed to get to the end that year. I once again had a really great support team and a great bunch of people helping me out and kicking my ass, which always makes a big difference.
And it took you just over 49 hours, is that right?
Yeah, I reckon it was 49 hours and 2 minutes. I think if you did it, anybody did it now, there's plenty of improvement in that time. I think you could definitely have a bit of a dip at that and tie the two up. I reckon Scott Bradley said he ran it in at just over 15 hours, so I reckon he could probably do it in around about 31 or 32 if he tried hard.
Yeah, and if folks want to read that, it's you've got a good report on your blog, haven't you?
Yeah, it's probably a little bit long, so make sure you've got a glass of wine there.
Yeah. No, we like long reports, that's fine. And then, not just content with that, the following year, you decided to do something different again, didn't you?
Yeah, I guess that's George's fault. I was just minding my own business, as I do. I got to talking with that bloke from Stonehaven, and we decided to have a bit of a go at the double. Once again, because it just seemed to be a logical thing to be doing. We had a pretty decent attempt. I'm still a little bit disappointed with it. We claim a whole host of reasons. It was bloody hot on the day we went down. We started Thursday night going into the Friday morning, started at midnight, and we were in shorts and t-shirts the whole way. It was a scorching day, and or even night even. But we got as far as Rippendale Down, 27 mile from Mulgine, and we just decided we wouldn't be able to make the Mulgine start line, which was the whole point. We needed to make the start line by 1 o'clock, so we decided to pull in at that stage. But it was once again a pretty good adventure, and it's obviously something that's still going to be out there.
Yeah, excellent. And again, there's a good report on your blog if people want to find out more about that. And then the following year, you came back 2011, and that was your best time, wasn't it? 22 hours 40. How did that one go?
Yeah, that one went sensationally for me. That was probably my best run, with the exception I had a few tummy troubles, which probably cost me, I reckon, maybe about half an hour or so. Just a few elongated pit stops, if you like. But that one really worked well for me. The previous 2 years had been really dry, and my feet had absolutely been just busted. I lost all the skin off the bottom of my feet, and it really sort of playing havoc with me towards the end of the race. But 2011, like this year, 2012, was lovely and wet, and I just had a ball. Everything just fitted in really well. Once again, support crew just were, everything was just clicked in place. They, you know, every checkpoint I was really minimising the amount of time. I'd done a little bit more work than I usually do. I'd run the fling quite, well, actually I'd had a pretty crap fling. It was a good crap fling, if that makes any sense. That I had a good bad run, so that, you know, finished in 11 and a half hours, and I thought, you know, feeling crap and getting 11 and a half hours to Tindrum is a pretty good place to be when you know that your goal is doing well in June, you know? So I really enjoyed, 2011, I must admit, I did really enjoy it. I knew I was on for a pretty good time, and it took probably half an hour off my PB, so I was stoked.
I remember that year quite well because I had a real battle that day, and I remember you went past me just after Bridge of Orkney, and you were just really solid, and I was having a bad stage. But you looked really comfortable.
You were definitely top. You really needed the meadow jelly babies at the top.
That's right. And a few more, yeah.
Yeah, that was another good year. I always remember because I saw Donny Campbell, him and I were touring and following, going across Larry Moore from Kinloch Leven, and I saw this bloke in the distance, and you know, I saw a gain on him and not gain on him, and then eventually passed him at Llandavera to G'day, you know, and then he passed me coming between Llandavera and the end, and we introduced, and obviously he went on to go and do a little bit of a decent run as well. So it's amazing how you feed off people when you're running at like paces, and you know, I don't care if I beat him or not, but I don't want to let him get out of sight, you know?
Yeah. Excellent. So do you think you've got a better time in you? Or do you think that's going to be your best?
I'd like to think that I'd go into 22. Maybe 21-30 at a real push. It all depends. I mean, I'm a little bit toiling around with this dodgy natty. I didn't really run much this year prior to this year's race. In fact, I didn't run from February to June. I still reckon 21-30 maybe and an outside would be probably my optimum. I'm not a fast runner, so I toil, but I guess I'm getting better at getting out there longer and staying better longer, if you like. So walking less towards the end of the race is where I'm now getting, and that's what happened in 2011, you know, much less stopping at checkpoints, much less mucking around, just walking, you know? That's probably where I age away at the time.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, look, I've got a whole lot of questions here. I put this saying that we were doing this interview on Facebook, and we've got lots of questions here, so we'll just work our way through them. Now, the first number are all about getting lost, and I wasn't quite sure what this was all about. Bill Ayres, he was asking, how do you find him? Helen was asking, what would you consider essential survival kit to carry on a winter training run? Stan Bland, should tracking devices be compulsory? And on it goes. Thomas, give a whole list of... he wants you to rate any of the following movies: Lost, Lost in Translation, The Lost World, Raiders of the Lost Ark, etc., etc. So what's all this about, Keith? What's all this stories about you being lost?
Yeah, on the advice of my media manager, I decided to decline to comment on any of that. I had a little bit of an adventure 2 weeks ago, or four weeks ago. I think it's all on the blog. People can read it if they like. I think we do get a little bit complacent sometimes. You know, we're near keen runners, we're really fit and all the rest of it. Effectively, I just made a mistake. I got myself lost. I went up a hill without a compass, by myself, as it was approaching dark, and I went the wrong way down. And I've not got a, despite all my running, I've not got that much experience in the hills, and I just got myself a little bit disorientated, effectively, that was me up on the hill as it was approaching darkness, missing the train back from Corolla Station, if anybody knows where that is. It's out in the middle of Randwick Moor, realising, oh dear, what the hell am I going to do now? I just ended up walking out. I couldn't find the way back to the station, which was probably only a mile and a half, 2 miles from where I was. So I decided to go the other way towards some lights. And 9 hours later, I ended up the other side of Rannoch Moor on the A82 near the Black Crows Lodge. So a little bit of a salutary tale for myself and a lesson, which luckily I didn't have to pay with. Too great a price. I mean, upset a lot of people, and a lot of people got very worried and all the rest of it, but luckily I was able to keep going, I guess, and I didn't have to get the sort of search rescue, couldn't come out because of the crappy weather, but luckily, as I say, it was a bit of a, it was a good lesson to be learned, that don't disrespect the outside, don't disrespect the climate and the hills. I was lucky. It could have, 5 degrees colder, the wind could have come up, the snow could have come down, and then maybe this would have had a different story. As it was, all it was a night out in the rain and the snow and a little bit of sleet and a lot of walking and a lot of effort. But as I say, gotta pay attention, I think. Bit of a kick up the arse for that one.
Yeah. I just read your report just while we were waiting for this to start. And the thing that I was amazed about, you know, the house that you went in, it was completely empty. All the lights were on and cars outside. Do you know any more what happened there?
Yeah, well, I don't really want to say too much about it because obviously I'm telling people that there's a house out in the middle of nowhere with a light on over the internet. But long story short, there was two houses in the area. They had a party. It was actually, they were all pissed, effectively. But the guy who had the party was in one house. There was somebody in the room at the back of the other, but he was out for the count. I stopped. Luckily, the lights were on, and I found a phone and called 999. They actually phoned the guy because the police found the number of the guy, and he came in to say, "Oh, hello."
Okay, that makes a bit more sense then. Okay, the next question was from Robert Kinnard, and he asked, who would be your sports personality of the year? And if you could nominate an ultra runner, who would you nominate?
There's only one for this. It's got to be Debs. She is an absolute stonking. She can't win the Grand Union Canal race. bloody hell, sensational. No other person. I had great runs this year and all the rest of it, but not dead. You're a fucking star.
Good. That's the next one. Stan Bland. What is your best memory so far of the West Highland Way race?
I reckon, apart from all my own sort of personal sort of stuff, the year I met Dave Waterman was a cracker. You know, coming across his cotton geese with tattoos, lost, coming out of Ginger was quite funny. Seeing people like, obviously, you can never run a race without thinking of Dario. Thinking about him being at checkpoints and all the rest of it. But I guess, in actual running terms, the times I spent with the two gyms, that same year that I ran with Dave Waterman, I also went across Rannoch Moor with Jim Drummond. And the guy's just got a wealth of stories. He's brilliant. We can top the lead off a bloody rocking horse, but geez, I'd like to spend some time away with.
Yeah.
And then the year I swept, which I think was 2007, spending the last 40 mile with Jim Robertson on his 13th West Island Way, and when you go up the Devil's Staircase, Jim's 68, I was 42 at the time, or something like 43 at the time, no matter, and we're going up and it's pissing down with moon, it's cold, windy, and I'm starting to feel a little bit whingy and a little bit, oh, crap, this is a bit hard, and I look at Jim, he's got 20 years older than me, and he's just got one foot in front of the other, and I thought, yeah, shut the hell up, Jim. And just to see him cross the line, I think it was his 12th, I just thought, you know what, that was a brilliant moment for me, I loved that time.
Yeah, excellent. Julie Clark. How and why has his attitude to the race changed over the years he's been involved in it? Does any goblet hold more meaning than another, and why?
They're all not equal. I love them all. They all sit on my mantelpiece. I feel like the big one that Dara got me after I did my little trot up to the Great Glen. He somehow contrived that they'd run out of goblets, and then I got presented with the goblet at Ian Beattie's house up in Perth that time, and that was only a month or so before, unfortunately, obviously Dario left us. So that one is definitely one of my favourites. It's definitely one I hold really dear to my heart. The actual my feelings toward the race, yeah, I guess. Obviously you started off and you don't know anything about it. Then you go. I've been through a period where I seemed to be. That was all I was doing, and you get all, not a little bit jaded, but you sort of go, oh, do I really want to do this again? But now I guess I'm focusing on another two goblets, and that's my focus at the moment. I've got a few other little challenges I'd like to do, but effectively it does change. You become, what am I running this for? I've proven that I can get from Mulgrave to Fort William. What else is there? Can I get a better time? Yeah, I'll get a better time. Or can I do something different? Or were you just going out there to enjoy it, which was this year. I really just went out to enjoy it this year, to be amongst our friends, you know?
Yeah.
It does change.
Yeah. Next one from Robin Womble. He asked, I remember Keith doing a pitch at the Inspiration Evening in 2010. He said that he only ran about 30 miles a week in training. Is this still the case, or does he do more miles now? So maybe a little bit about your training.
No, I don't really do any more than that. I'm probably doing one long run a month, if I can. From January to June, I try and get at least a 30 or 40 mile. And then I just really don't have time to do a lot of miles. And also, I think things like, as I said earlier on, I've got a bit of a dodgy knee at the moment. I think that was actually caused by a little bit too much running in 2011. So I'm scaling it right back again. Three or four times, two or three times a week, I get out and do 5, 6, 7 mile, maybe. But cross train, and just quality, get uphill. walking. I used to walk to work every single day, so that probably added to my miles, and I can walk really quickly. So, no, I don't. I'm definitely a low mileage sort of guy, and to each their own, but I'll always be that. I can't see myself ever ramping up to beyond that. I think the peak mileage I've ever had was when I ran the Fling, and I'd done a really good run the week before, and I think that was 70 mile in a week, 76 mile in a week one time, but not for me,
Lee McLean, she asks, how important is it to him to hit the wagon for 6 months before the race? And is there anything that can tempt him off it?
Only Lee's engagement party last year was the, that's about the only thing. Maybe an occasional wedding, I'll have a glass of champagne at, but no, to me, going on the wagon is part of my training. It's the mental side of things that I give up. I really like a beer. I really like a glass of red wine. And I just give that up. And I give up coffee as well. And that's the mental side that people say, oh, it doesn't impact you. No, it doesn't. Physically, it doesn't. It's a matter of job. But it matters to me. It matters to me in my head that, no, I'll have a beer at the end of the West Island Way. So, it is very important to me.
Yeah. Good. Nadal McEwen, with the experience of 8 goblets under your belt, how has your training regime changed over the years? What will it consist of during the next 6 months or so? And what are your targets for the 2013 race? We could have some of those, but...
Yeah, I think I've covered some of those. My training for the next couple of months will be, winter training. I'm actually going to... Guy came to work the other day and he was doing this high intensity training. I'm interested in having a look at that. Apparently they've tagged it down to you don't need to do it to run 6 seconds sprints. It's mad. So I might do a little bit of that just for a bit of a giggle. But no, kicking on with what I usually do, 3-4 mile runs, 2 or 3 miles, two or three runs a week. Maybe try and get one long run, build it up again in January. And getting back into my swimming, cross training in the gym when I can, just ticking along. I think that bloke is wanting to go down to Yorkshire in March. I might go and do that. I think I'll walk the Fling again because I really enjoyed that this year, and walk the Catherine maybe. But no real big plans. And as for what I want to do in 2013, I'll decide on that in about assuming I get a place, of course. I'll sort of work out if I'm going to do anything else around about
April, May. Right. Sandra McDougall, she asks, we covered about getting involved in ultra running, but she says, what race haven't you done that you'd love to do?
I think the UTMB. I think it's on the plan for some time after 2015. I think I'd like to go and do that once. I have owned the Scottish races. I've not really run anywhere else. So I think after I've hopefully cracked through to number 10, I'll start looking a bit further afield.
Robert Kinnard asks, what is your least favourite and favourite sections of the West Highland Way and why?
I like Robert's question because he said that Rannoch Moor was his least favourite, and coming out of 2002, that was me as well. I hated it. But then I went back the following year, and I was being paced by John Kennedy, and I just stuck behind him and soaked up the atmosphere. And obviously, I was on a much better time. It was earlier in the day, and now it's probably my favourite bit. I just love the ambience of that whole place. It's quiet. It's, you don't hear the cars. It's brilliant. Then you come up over the hill and you go down into you see the Buffalo and the King's House, and that's just brilliant. I think my least favourite used to be as well, the bit north of Inversnaid. Everybody hates it. The goat track, you know, the rocks, the tree roots and all the rest of it. And I hated that with a passion. But then, once again, I saw a post by Thomas a few years ago on the forum, and he said, oh, I love it. Slows me down, everybody's walking, you know it's going to take your pace out. And I think that changed my mentality towards that bit. I just saw it through different eyes, and I don't like it now, but I hate it less. So, in summary, my most hated bit is the bit down from the forest coming down into Fort William. I think it's a little-known fact that Fort William lives on its own tectonic plate, and it actually moves further away from that just by a couple of metres. But I'm sure it moves every year. It just takes a bloody age. Sure it does.
Excellent. There's a good question from Andy Johns. He was saying, where do you see the race going in the future, apart from the Fort William Leisure Centre, in terms of numbers and race format? Should the race always be limited to 200 runners and a 1 o'clock start, or could it become a UTMB style event in decades to come as ultra running becomes more accepted by the average runner? And if you could change one thing about the West Highland Way race, what would it be? So where do you see the race going?
That's a tough one. I'd hate to see it have 10,000 people start at the start line. It just would ruin it for me. But at that same thing, how can you deny that we've got this absolutely fantastic race and people want to enjoy it? Why do we have to restrict it to just 200 people? I know why, because that's the right thing to do, and I think having, like I said, 10,000 people line up for it would be absolute mayhem and would destroy the environment that we're running through. And it would also mean that we couldn't have support crews, which I believe are some of the greatest bits. You come into that whole family environment whenever you go through a checkpoint. I would hate to see that change. I just don't see what is going to stop that in the way of progress. When 200 becomes 250, becomes 300, and then it just sort of snowballs from there. If there was one thing I could change, it would be just drop bags up until Chindrum. I reckon you don't need any support early on. Support on hand, yes, but you don't need anybody from the bottom half, I don't think, until Ben Glass, really, but obviously we can't go into Queen Callum at the moment. Yeah, I think support bags till
Tinder
would be my one change.
Okay. Anne Hayden Johnson asks, what satisfaction did you get from leading my daughter astray? Since she met him, she has been seduced into the world of all-day runners.
I can honestly say that it was one of my proudest moments of my life to see not only Antonia finish this year, but also Carrie. Carrie Craig. I've run with both of them over the last couple of years. And to see somebody that you originally met, I mean, I met Antonia during the Round Britain Relay. And I just happened to mention that I was into running and she was coming into interested into it. To see her get a goblet, I was as chuffed as a chuffed person. So, I take great pride in that, Anne. And in the same way that I know that John Kennedy has, I blame him for everything I've done. It's a joy.
Excellent. Charles Gordon, what do you think is the most important part of training for your race?
Getting yourself mentally ready. Under training, but over ready, if you like, or mentally prepared to do it. Telling the start line, injury free, or at least with minimal injuries, but knowing that you're mentally ready to do it. I think sometimes people focus too much on the physical aspects and get themselves bound up about getting such a peak shape that they sometimes might overtrain and get themselves injured. So they're knackered mentally. They're all worried about it. Whereas if you take a step back and look at what we're doing, you go, oh shit, I need to actually focus on how I'm going to get through this mentally. You can only get so far on the physical stuff. Keeping your mental strength up is the way to get to the end, I think.
That's really interesting. Thanks. Dave Waterman. Corned Beef is a bit of a sharp dressing dude at work. I remember him almost having a heart attack when his Hugo Boss suit jacket fell on the floor when we were lunching in Edinburgh. How important is style to Corned Beef when he dresses for an ultra?
I'm actually coming out with my own line. I'm actually working with both Chanel, or Coco Chanel. That's actually her legitimate son, Caco Chanel, Louis Vuitton, and Armani. They're all putting in bids for my race wear for next year. So watch this space. I am very pissed off that I did lose my Australian cricket hat a couple of years ago, and now I've just got a new floppy blue hat that I am wearing in for the race. But yeah, very important to me.
Milton McEwan's got another question. Aussies generally are pretty crazy about sport. Before discovering ultras, what were CB's sporting background, interests and achievements?
In the same way that probably I ran into ultras, I never really had any. I just took part. I used to like sailing a bit. I used to do a bit of golf badly. Used to ride around on a bush bike with my mates. I played cricket until I was in grade four. Never really had a big sporting background. Came into marathons after the birth of my daughter in 1997, in the same way that I've come into ultras, didn't train, just turned up. No sporting background at all, no pedigree, no running clubs, nothing. Just stumbled into it and sort of found my niche, if you like.
Excellent. Okay, just before we finish, Keith, I've just got a few quick fire questions that I've been asking most people who get interviewed on these, just to give a bit of a feel of the race. I think there's so many things that are personal preferences, you know, what people enjoy. So I'll just rattle through these and just reply as you think. So shoes, would you wear road shoes or trail shoes?
Shoes this year, Hokas for the first time. I thought they were pretty good. 2 years previous to that, I'd worn Innovates, and the previous five races, I'd worn Kayanos for a mixture. I think I'll stick with the Hoka clown shoes for the moment, though. Even though they're a slippery thing, they seem to provide a lot of padding for my aged decrepit knees.
Food, what is your favourite food to keep you going?
Soup, rice, pasta, mashta, more rice if you like. But yeah, no soup. I like a bit of soup. Potato, occasionally. I'll do.
Yeah.
I think that'll keep me going.
For drinks, would you carry a hydration pack or a water bottle? What's your preference?
I've always carried a hydration pack, but a few years ago, I used to carry it with lots of water in it, and obviously don't need that as much. So I'm actually thinking now I might switch down to bottles, because I'm finding that I'm drinking less anyway. So hydration pack up now, but that's currently under review.
Okay. Would you drink mainly water or energy drink or a mixture?
Water in my bag, and then every checkpoint I put a half a noon tablet into 500 mils and soak away at that as and when I need it. That seemed to keep me going for the last couple of years anyway. I find that by about being glass, I can't stomach any of the sports drinks or anything like that. The Coke, I quite like about the middle. Obviously for the caffeine hit, but if you're not caffeine for 6 months, that works well. And around King's house, Kim of Leaven, I like about half a litre of milk.
Salt tablets? Do you take salt tablets or not?
No, just notes.
Yeah. Do you run with a watch, a Garmin, or would you prefer to have no timepiece?
I run with a watch, just a basic stopwatch. I'm frightened of other stuff that would break down or rely on it too much. So, yeah, I like keeping an eye on the time. I don't like being out there sort of totally timeless, if you like. But I like knowing where I am, more or less there or thereabouts, you know, but logging every minute or every meter is definitely not for me.
Yeah. Your support crew, would you have one or two teams?
Generally have two. My mate starts off with me at an initial stage of the race and takes me up to Rowden, and then he kicks my ass and sends me on my way. And I've got a second crew from north of the lock. And that's, like I said, that seems to have worked well in the last couple of years.
Yeah. Favourite section of the race? I think we've covered this a little bit, but what would you...
Yeah, like I said, Randmore. Love it. Yeah. Absolutely love it.
On a race or a long training run your own, would you listen to music or podcasts or talking books, or do you prefer to have nothing?
Just nothing. Once again, I've got wonky ears and all that stuff keeps falling out. I've never found headphones that I like. And it's just a faff. I'd rather just listen to the birds and the sound of my feet and whatever else happens to be going on.
Yeah. Have you got a favourite mantra that you use to keep yourself going when things get tough?
The usual one, TTFU. I tend to shout at myself a lot. You've got yourself into this position, just crack on, you know. This year was really bizarre. I had bloody Rihanna's umbrella in my mind from Morgan to around about Ben Glass. Just kept going on a loop through my mind because that was the last time I played. As it was persisting down with rain, it seemed to be appropriate, but I'd rather not repeat that experience again.
What thing do you look forward to most when you've finished?
Oh, my beer. I love my beer. I usually get empty bitter shipped in from Australia or down south. I love a beer. And I just love the prize giving ceremony. Just seeing everybody at the end and just going, I've done it again, you know. Yeah, I really like that.
And if you could leave one tip to other runners, what would it be?
I think I've said it before. Cry less, walk more, toughen the fuck up.
Good.
just enjoy it. It's not you're doing something absolutely incredible. Don't lose sight of that. Don't beat yourself up. Just really enjoy it. And I guess finally, it is an ultra marathon. It's not a run. It's not a sprint. So it takes time to find out what you're doing, to listen to your body and all the rest of it. Don't try and rush into it and think, I've got to cram in 20 years of training into 6 months so that I can complete this race. No, you don't. Just take it easy. Enjoy it.
Mm. Great. Well, thank you very much, Keith. That was really helpful. I'm sure that will help a lot of folks, and I'm sure there'll be lots of people in this year's race that will be looking forward to seeing you and running with you. And we wish you all the best for the next 6 months, 7 months, as you prepare for the race and as we toe the line in June. So thank you very much.
Cheers. Cheers all.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed the latest West Highland Way Race podcast. I'll do another one in the new year. So if I don't see you or get a chance, then I'd like to wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And no doubt once January starts, people will start to think more seriously about their training plans and what they want to do in regard to the West Highland Way Race. So we'll be following various people and hopefully lots more interviews as we think about and build up to the race in June. So Happy Christmas, and thanks for listening. And remember, slow and steady wins the race.